Hey, you're listening to the Popmatic Podcast. This is October's exciting episode. I'm Brian, and joining me today are...
Crystal.
Bill.
Mark.
And Clint.
Clint is here today, and what we're going to talk about today is Hispanic Heritage Month. And we've never done that before on the podcast, and that is really, really super cool. So just, of all of us in the room, does anyone identify as Hispanic or Latino? Awesome. So we got a bunch of white people acted like turkeys. All right. So we're going to try to...
Does eating El Taco count occasionally?
No, that does not count. But, you know, we can still recommend good books, movies, and music for you to check out from the library and hopefully not make fools of ourselves or offend anyone. I think that'll be good.
Those are all things that we do best.
Make
fools and...
Natural.
I mean, the former... I'm okay with that, and hopefully that's fun for everybody. I don't want to offend too many people. Okay. So, all right, let's get going. But, oh, yeah, I always forget. Hey, what else is happening at the library in October?
Okay, movies at Maine. Two movies this month in October because it's Halloween and we do our Movies at Maine Get Scary. On October 5th at 2 p.m., we're showing Witchfinder General. Join us and special ghoulish guest host Dr. Gangrene for the horror cult classic starring Vincent Price, Witchfinder General. In 17th century England, Matthew Hopkins Price has been appointed witchfinder by the Puritan royalist, and with his help of his thuggish assistant Stern, played by the evil Robert Russell, Hopkins travels around brutally interrogating those accused of witchcraft by using fire, drowning, and torture to extract confessions from the accused. Now, on October 19th at 2 p.m., we're going to show Repulsion. What could be scarier than the fast descent into madness? We'll come find out when we show Repulsion, the psychological thriller directed by Roman Polanski and starring Catherine Deneuve. Just wanted to also say this event is free and open to the public. Bring the family, that is, if your family is the Manson family.
Cool. I like the way you said Deneuve.
Deneuve.
Yeah, Witchfinder General, that's a good movie. Repulsion's good, too. Other stuff that's happening in October. October is Art-tober all across the city, so there'll be all sorts of art events here in Nashville and at the library. I'll put a link in. Also, when this podcast posts, we'll actually be in the middle of Hispanic Heritage Month and all the events that we're going to do here at the library, and I'll have a link for that too. Also, a new thing that's happening at the library, or semi-new, is Unbound. It's the library's quarterly event schedule and newsletter. And if you're used to those big legal sheets with all the hours of the branches and everything and everyone's location and phone number, now those are all going to be inside Unbound. So you might have seen Unbound at your library branch. It's our second issue. It's getting better every time. Check it out. It's pretty cool. Unbound. So, Hispanic Heritage Month, I wanted to talk about this movie, The Mission, starring Benjamin Bratt. And what it's about is a guy, Che, who's a bus driver in the Mission neighborhood in San Francisco. And the gist of the story is basically he's a single dad and his son comes out as gay. Or it doesn't actually come out, he catches his son, right? So his son is outed as gay. And then it causes all this conflict in the family. This guy, Che, he's a bus driver, but he used to be like sort of like a street thug in the neighborhood. And he's sort of like the king of the neighborhood. He doesn't commit crimes anymore, but he's the coolest guy in the neighborhood. He's an alpha male. He has a low rider. He does custom paint jobs on cars. He is like super butch, like super machismo. And then his son comes out as gay. And it's not just that he's gay, but also for him being a Latino in the Mission District, there's sort of a class war. So, like, the gay folks in San Francisco are kind of like rich white people that he doesn't like. So there's this other whole class thing on. And when his son, right, comes out, he finds out his son's gay, it's like a double betrayal. Like, how could you, right? And this stares these issues right in the face. There's some really intense scenes. I think the ending is a little bit Hallmark movie of the week for me, but, you know, you just have to watch it for yourself. I mean, it still doesn't shy away from you know, the sort of, like, really intense drama, you know, within the family. And then also, you know, the Benjamin Bratt as Che really owns the movie. It's really about him, about what he has to deal with. But also, like, just the Mission District in San Francisco itself is the other, I think, character about the movie. It's the name of the movie. It's a love letter to that neighborhood in San Francisco, which, you know, a couple years ago, you still could get an semi-affordable apartment. I don't know if that's true anymore. That's one of the things that the movie is about. I actually saw this movie at the Bell Court, and the director, Peter Bratt, Benjamin Bratt's brother, was there. And, you know, he answered questions after the movie, and it actually helped me appreciate the movie a little bit more. Me, you know, I'm kind of dumb. I didn't get that one of the themes of the movie was that Che's Catholicism in the movie was actually mixed with all these sort of like feminine divine elements from indigenous Mexican religion, and that was sort of there as an undercurrent in the movie. And of course, I was too stupid to get that. But if I want to put that little seed in your brain, then if you see the movie, you'll see them too, and you realize that how it's not just about him coming to terms with his son being gay, but maybe his own femininity or lack thereof. You know, his persona as this big tough guy. Pretty good movie, and I was happy and thankful that Peter Bratt came and talked about it here in Nashville. So there is that Nashville connection. So, Crystal, what you got?
All right, so I'm going to talk about music, but before I do that, often when you are learning about a new culture, your introduction may come from the cuisine. So check out my recent blog post for some excellent Latin cookbook recommendations, including Gran Cocina Latina by Maricel Priscilla. But back to the music. So if you've listened to Popmatic or read my reviews on the blog with any consistency, you know I'm a big fan of British new wave and pop, in particular bands like The Smiths, U2, especially The Cure. Yes, I spent days moping around trying to be a goth kid in rural Kentucky, the closest Hot Topic, at least an hour's drive away. Sometimes, you know, we Americans take for granted that there's a great big world out there, and maybe we're not the only mopey goth kids out there in the world. And some of those kids go on to make great music influenced by those same bands. Here's where a Mexico City band named Caifanes comes into the picture. The cover of their debut record came out in 1988. It looks like a photo shoot styled by Robert Smith himself. And we'll link to this album cover. You got to see it. Caifanes created a dark and a synth-driven brand of rock. Later on, their albums kind of subtly wove in traditional music styles. They worked with Nashville's own musician and producer Adrian Belew on their 1992 album El Silencio. But the band broke up in the mid-90s. They had later reunited for some shows in the early 2000s. But in their day, Caifanes is one of the biggest Latin rock acts. And you can download their music through Freegal. So you can get your 5 tracks a week, put the rest on your wish list. Now, former Caifanes band members, the frontman Saul Hernandez and drummer Alfonso Andre, then formed the band Jaguares. And Crystal really likes that name because Jaguares is Spanish for jaguar. Of course, I'm the big cat person, too. So Saul had this dream that a jaguar, he was playing inside a jaguar's mouth, thus the new name of the band. Now, my significant other is in the music business, and his business partner, JC, was the one that introduced me to Jaguares. And so I asked JC to help me describe the band's sound, and here I quote JC, "Their songs have complex melodic textures and lyrical depth. Saul's lyrics are so introspective and poetic, translations don't do them justice. They're beautifully written and very deep." Now, if you don't believe J.C., Morrissey handpicked them to open him on his tour in 2002. In 2003, Jaguares was here in Nashville recording some music, and my husband drove them around in our old red van. So we should have kept it. It would have been a piece of music memorabilia. The album that JC recommended that I start with is El Primer Instinto, and it is also available through Freegal along with the rest of their albums. And Jaguares is still playing music today. If you'd like to learn more about Latin rock from its beginnings to new artists, go download the June 28th episode of the Sound Opinions podcast. Jim and Greg, the host of Sound Opinions, they interviewed Josh Norick, and he is the VP of the Latin alternative music label Nacional Records. All right. So, Mike, what you got?
So I'm going to take a brief digression back to the misty time of 1998. I was a freshman in college. Terry Gilliam is going to come out with a new movie called Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and I was excited. But fortunately, I was too chicken to leave campus. I had a very bad freshman year where I was so I spent most of my time in the library reading. Instead of going to see a movie, I decided to check out the book, and the book was, like, amazing. Like, I really... not prepared for the gonzo style journalism of Hunter S. Thompson, and I was really I really liked the weird surrealism and the humor and the asides and stuff. Eventually, I'd read everything that he wrote within that year, which was like crazy. It's like I didn't really read nonfiction at that point, before that, and then this time it's like, oh, well, I'm going to read nothing but Hunter S. Thompson because this is amazing. Anyway. What I really liked at the time was his sidekick in the book was his attorney, who was never named. I think they call him Dr. Gonzo, the 300-pound Samoan attorney who had advised him to do horrible things.
And, don't we all have one of those?
As your attorney, somewhere. I advise you to point your gun to this guy or something. You know? And I reread the book for the podcast, and... I didn't really find him as funny this time, but wah, wah.
All that stuff you did in college, it's so great.
Oh,
you
man.
Get a little older.
Yeah. 15 years later or whatever, not so much. But anyway, later on, I read another book by him called The Great Shark Hunt, and there I read, and it's also the essays there, a lot of them are reprinted in Fear and Loathing at Rolling Stone. Read more about who his attorney actually was in real life was a guy named Oscar Zeta Acosta, who was an actual attorney who practiced the law that apparently Thompson changed his name because he didn't want him to, like, get disbarred for doing crazy stuff. Acosta didn't care. He's like, he would rather have been named, but it was too late, so they, like, published it without his name being in the actual book. He was a big attorney during a thing in the late 60s, the Chicano movement, where Mexican American seemed too stuffy, I guess. So they decided to call themselves Chicanos, at least according to Thompson in his book. What little research I did. But basically, like, it was the LAPD was treating Mexican Americans very poorly. And this came to a head with the murder of Ruben Salazar, a journalist who walked into a bar, asked for a drink, and a policeman shot a tear gas grenade into the bar, and it exploded next to his head, killing him instantly.
Thanks.
In the subsequent trial, the LAPD claimed that there was a gunman in the back, and that's where we were aiming the grenades to stop this strange gunman that no witnesses saw, that, you know, no corroboration, and the police officer got away with it, which caused riots and bombings in, I forget the building, I think it was the city hall. The bathrooms were bombed by a group calling itself the Chicano Liberation Front. That was an essay called Strange Rumblings in Aztlan.
Aztlan. I just say, like, that essay is intense. And in so many ways, it's an appreciation of Acosta. Like, the way that Thompson can write it. You know what I mean? It's an essay, but it's all about Acosta. And then it's also reporting on those events.
Yeah, it was – Acosta was an interesting guy because, you know, you got – and the sense to be, like, in Fear and Loathing Las Vegas is, like, they're BFFs, you know. And in real life, it was very kind of, you know – that they get along for long periods, and then Acosta would say something crazy, or they would get high on drugs and do bad things, and you know, like at some point they'd stop talking for a while, and Acosta said if Thompson got near him again, he would carve like mace into his face. So he maced him too much. Anyway, but there's another essay that it was a good Fear and Loathing in the Graveyard of the Weird, The Banshee Screams for Buffalo Meat, which was a kind of eulogy for Acosta, because apparently between this essay and the previous one, Acosta had vanished. That the theory is that he angered somebody, and the person he angered took care of him. it's a very amusing essay. It's more like a roast. Like he's kind of making fun of him while also, you know, saying how much he misses him and trying to be very interesting. So, Brian, did you have anything left?
I don't know. I guess I said what I wanted to say about like Fear and Loathing and Rolling Stone and the essays about Acosta are just those are really intense and really good, and I think that they offer a really good perspective on the emergence of the Chicano movement. So some other stuff, and I didn't want to talk about too much about them because I've talked about them before on the podcast, but like Edward James Olmos played the lead in Battlestar Galactica. He was like the rock on that show. Like, of course, like in Star Trek Next Generation, there's like this big patriarchal daddy figure, and it's a white dude who's bald with a British accent. Like, how kind of boring. So like, you know, on Battlestar Galactica, right, it's a little bit more intense, a little bit more real. And I think that Eddie Olmos is one of these actors that's totally self-righteous all the time.
But Edward James to the rest of us, yeah. But Eddie.
That's Mr. Olmos.
You know, listen, you know, we were in L.A., and me and him and a cop, never mind, never mind. But, you know, he's always kind of self-righteous. But, you know, one of the things he's talked about Battlestar Galactica is that, you know, kids have written him and say it was awesome that you were this Latino character who was in space. You know, like, it's cool because, you know, Star Trek is supposed to be real diverse, and really Star Trek isn't that diverse. It always has a few token characters, and that's pretty much the end of it. And, of course, Star Trek always others, instead of just being like, you know, humans aren't racist, but they're always just racist towards other species. But anyway. And then also Locus by the Hernandez brothers was a collection of stories that the Hernandez brothers had created in the Love and Rockets comics. And Locus was all the collected stories of the longtime friends and lovers, Maggie and Hopi. This is like actually probably my favorite book ever, if I had a favorite book. And just super intense, awesome, intense love story. And then also a chronicling of punk rock Latino kids in California. Just brilliant. Some of the most brilliant writing. The art is brilliant, too. It's just universal acclaim for that stuff, and I've talked about it, written about it before, so it's out there. Go get it. The library owns it. Do it. And then, Crystal, you want to talk about a movie, too?
Yeah, I wanted to mention a movie because we haven't mentioned any movies yet. Mexican director Alfonso.
I talked about a movie first. We started off with a movie.
Oh, yeah, I'm okay. Sorry.
Silence.
It's been a long day.
I don't care. I'm just picking
on you. I was sleeping during your segment. No. Alfonso Cuarón, I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right, a filmmaker whom you may know from Children of Men, third Harry Potter film adaptation, The Prisoner of Azkaban, The Great Expectations film adaptation. Well, he made one of the smartest and I dare say sexiest films ever, Y Tu Mamá También, translated title And Your Mother Too. It came out in 2001, and he co-wrote the script and directed it. Stars Gael Garcia Bernal, Maribel Verdú, and Diego Luna. It's a story, basically, two teenage boys, newly graduated. Their girlfriends have gone away for the summer. They embark on a spontaneous road trip with a sophisticated older woman. But there is so much more going on here, and the narrator reveals this as the events unfold. We've got the Mexico of privilege to the struggles of the working class. It's an unforgettable film. You gotta see it. Cuarón's latest film, Gravity, opens October 4th, so this podcast might be posted before that. It's a sci-fi mystery starring George Clooney and Sandra Bullock. Basic plot, a medical engineer and an astronaut work together to survive after an accident leaves them adrift in space. So, looking forward to that.
A radical. And just a few other things. I wanted to just two shout outs to. One of the things is the emergence of Junot Diaz as a major literary voice. Like, he wrote The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde and a book about a nerd. I like that. That's really cool. And that's awesome. But here's just another suggestion, and maybe someone that's probably more less read, is Dagoberto Gilb. Is a critically acclaimed writer. He's sort of the Latino version of Daniel Woodrell, sort of like down and out working class people. And he himself used to be a day laborer before he became a writer. But now he's been nominated for a National Book Award. So some of his books are Woodcuts of Women and Magic of the Blood. I think the library has those. Local connection, Lorraine Lopez teaches at Vanderbilt, or used to. I'm not sure if she still does, but she used to. She wrote the Gifted Gabaldon Sisters. Also, just some of one of my favorite writers, you know, since I've started working here is Roberto Bolaño. He was from Mexico, went to Chile, lived in Mexico, died in Spain. All his novels are written in Spanish, and most of us here in the States read them in translation. But he wrote The Savage Detectives and 2666. Amazing books. If you want to go back to classics, you can go back to Rodolfo Anaya's Bless Me Ultima. We touched on Ben Books Week a few minutes on the last episode, and Bless Me Ultima occasionally appears on the Ben Books list. You know, it's too good for everyone to read, I guess. No, I don't know what it is. It's about a relationship with a teenage boy and his grandmother, and, you know, the grandmother isn't a Christian. She has has an indigenous faith, and that's kind of pagan, and some people don't like that. So I think that's why that ends up on Ben Books list. And this will post maybe a week after Banned Books Week ends, I think. But I kind of wanted to give a shout-out to Tony Diaz and El Libro Traficantes, which is the book smugglers. So in New Mexico, after they banned Mexican studies in New Mexico, what he did was he was a writer or a college professor in Houston. So what he did was he started a caravan to get all the books that were in the Mexican studies curriculum and actually just go across the United States from Texas and at least from Texas into Mexico anyway, and collect books along the way and do readouts along the way, and then give these books back to the kids, like put them in community centers and after school places since they weren't allowed to read them in school anymore. So what were some of the books that were banned at the time? House on Mango Street by Sandra Cisneros, which is we have as a book club in a bag here. The aforementioned Bless Me Ultima, which is sort of universally recognized as classic, sort of the beginning of Southwest Latino literature. Also, Dagoberto Gilb is in that list of books that are banned. So it's awesome. I just wanted to throw a shout out to Libro Traficantes because that's an awesome project. So that's all I got. I wanted to ask Bill, though. Bill, mm-hmm. Who's your favorite Latino actor?
Well, to tell you the truth, Raul Julia.
Yeah?
Just Kiss of the Spider Woman, but also I've rediscovered Presumed Innocent, and his performance was just lethal in that movie. I can't remember the character's name, the lawyer, but anyway, I've always liked him. And Three Penny Opera, my brother got to see him on Broadway in that stage, and you know, he was always fantastic. And it's just interesting that he's popped up. I recently watched another film, Panic in Needle Park, which I think was his film debut, and he just had a charisma there. So he would probably be my favorite.
I dig it.
And he sadly passed away at a young age. So
I feel that. Who's the guy that played the Emperor in Dune?
I was just thinking, Jose Ferrer.
All right.
I was going to bring it up, but I didn't know like how I could like segue it in.
Because
that guy has an awesome voice.
I'm just going there.
Yeah. I was like, you know, yeah, he could, you know, he had such, you know, a towering presence in that tiny role.
Yeah, okay.
Damn.
Get that floating fat man in here.
Yeah.
He's
the uncle of George Clooney?
I just totally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bill's like, I was really busy and sick this week. I don't think I have anything for the main segment. I got you to quote Dune. All right. He's the father of, what's his son's name?
Miguel Ferrer.
Miguel Ferrer.
Who played the mean forensicist.
Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Miguel Ferrer will always be the bad guy in RoboCop. So
yeah.
You're one too. Bad mother trucker.
say Mother.
Mother Trucker.
Oh, okay. All right. What is tickling our fancy this month? Bill, what you got?
Okay, tickling my fancy is Red's Classic Barbershop, which is located downtown on 221 4th Avenue North. I had become frustrated with my haircuts. I won't name the establishment. So I pass this every day going to where I park. So I thought, well, I'll give this place a try. And I'm glad I did. You have to make an appointment, but once I got in there, they cut my hair just the way I liked it. The barber was very professional, and he didn't tell me about his hernia operation, which I had one barber, and I had to listen to every ailment he ever had when he cut my hair. What should have took 15 minutes turned into 45 minutes, but anyway. The people at Red's Barbershop, it's Red Classics Barbershop, once again, 221 4th Avenue North. This is where I'm going to go to get my hair cut from now on. It has great ambiance, like I said, very professional. Their phone number is 742-1799. I highly recommend it.
I've walked by there, and I've thought, like, I probably need to make an appointment for there because they have a cool shop.
Yes, they do. That's a cool shop.
I would go there.
I mean, it was great.
What you got, Mike?
All right. So, for me, October will always be Shocktober. Like, you know, I put aside my trashy mysteries. I put aside snooty independent films and instead only watch horror. Only read horror. Then by November 1st, I'm totally tired of horror for another year. So I thought, for Shocktober, I would recommend both, you know, my favorite horror novel and the book that I always recommend to anyone. If my grandmother needs to read a book, if my best friend wants to read a new book, I like recommending House of Leaves. I love this book.
Daniel Zabzalewski? You recommend that to your grandma?
And then she'll read it and give me a weird look. Yeah, it's great. Like, okay, so basically it's about this. It's like a book within a book within a book, you know, kind of shell game thing. Like, this guy named Johnny Truant moves into a new apartment. He finds a book that was written by the previous tenant that's really, like, odd. It's like a transcription of a documentary that never existed about this family that moves into a house in Virginia that's bigger on the inside than the outside. And it's not like, cool, TARDIS, let's go through time. It's more like, the house is messing with you. You should leave. you know, and I really liked that it was, you know, a malevolent house book as opposed to a haunted house book, because, I mean, it seemed like, you know, there's different rules that go along, you know, as the book progresses. And a lot of, like, aesthetic thingies I liked, you know, like the when the characters enter the labyrinth about halfway through and encounter the Minotaur. Like, the footnotes around the pages start to swirl as, like, the characters get more and more lost into the labyrinth, and you realize that the text itself is becoming a labyrinth. Which is, like, really, really cool looking. And, like, there's a point towards the end of the book where one character is looking for the other one, and, like, words start disappearing from the pages as you read along until there's one word at a time per page until the person meets the other person, and then there's two. I mean, it's aesthetic choices that I really like. And also that the ink used in the book, different editions have different ink used. The latest one, they incorporate all the inks, but the one that I originally read, House was always in blue, even in different languages like maison or house or casa. And at first you're like, that's amusing. And then about halfway through the book, it gets kind of creepy. Like, you know, and even, you know, in the footnotes. There's other editions where Minotaur is always in red and underlined. And I believe in all editions, whenever Johnny Truant's mother, sometimes she'll mention stuff and her text will be in purple. That one I'm not really sure about. So I thought it was super cool, and it blew my mind, and I recommend it to anybody. So House of Leaves, and I can't really recommend any of his other stuff, but you could try that out and tell me if it's any good.
The library used to own his sister Poe.
Yes.
The album that kind of goes along with that book, and it's called Haunted.
Yeah, I've heard about it. Like, there's supposed to be like a track called House of Leaves, and supposedly somewhere on there he's reading from the book. Yeah.
Like, it's on YouTube if we don't own it anymore.
So how about you, Brian?
So I thought there was going to be... So that's House of Leaves is your favorite horror novel and the book you always recommend.
Oh, yeah.
What was your favorite horror novel?
It's scary.
Yeah, okay.
It's a very scary book. And then towards the end, I thought it was neat because it almost kind of it morphs into a Dove story.
Okay. Oh, no, I just asked, I thought you there were two separate books.
No, okay. This is the same.
So it's the same book.
I thought,
book.
You know, kill two birds with one stone. That's right.
That's how good it is. And you haven't read his other books.
I read I think these the Whalestow Letters, which was kind of a spinoff that as an appendix to the book, they compiled like all the letters that Trani Truant's mother wrote to him from an insane asylum. And you could combine the first letters in each letter. Like in each correspondence, I guess. You could combine the first letters and create messages and stuff. And it's really like, you know, it get kind of creepy after a while because she started to tell like, you know, in the actual letter, like, you know, she's saying like, you know, how the insane asylum is totally great and stuff. And then you read between the lines and she's telling like just, you know, crazy off the wall stuff. But in the spinoff book, he added more letters, but it's not, I don't know if I really seek it out. I mean, it doesn't really answer any questions. It just, you know, it's much like Lost where it just keeps giving you more questions.
Okay. Because I just know that like even the fans of House of Leaves have just kind of split on the stuff that he's published since then.
Yeah. I picked up the 50-Year Sword, but I haven't gotten around to reading it. And Only Revolutions like is written in verse, which drives me bananas. So I haven't like, gotten around to reading it because every time I pick it up, I'm like, and put it back.
I dig it.
So, Brian.
Okay. So, just to completely shift gears, you guys know how much I like soft drinks, right? No. I don't like soft drinks, though I do like coffee. But what is tickling my fancy is Red Bull Music Academy Radio, which is a website and an app and everything. And it's, I guess it's sponsored by Red Bull, right? Okay. But apparently the corporate overlords at Red Bull actually are willing to fund some really cool music projects because Red Bull Music Academy Radio has like playlists and DJs and long form interviews with all sorts of musical artists. And actually, the book that I talked about last week, Assimilate, A Critical History of Industrial Music by S. Alexander Reed, has me like reinvigorated just about music, my love of music. I'm just like into music and seeking out new artists again. And it's been a while since I think I felt that way. I just stumbled upon this site called Red Bull Music Academy Radio, and they like, so they have all these house DJs and mixes and programs, but two programs that I really love that they do. One's called Fireside Chat, and one's called Headphone Highlights. And Fireside Chat is, for an hour, they talk to a musician about their career. Like, tell us, you know, and their evolution between albums, and then they also play tracks from the albums. So this is a really long, in-depth interview. And like I said, they actually kind of do, like, new artists and like off the wall stuff. So like I listened to the one by Tim Hecker, who's like, I guess it depends who you ask, is like really critically acclaimed composer, producer, whatever you want to call him. But it's like it was just amazing hearing like Tim Hecker talk about his musical evolution, how he went from playing normal music to doing like ambient music. It was just really, really good. And then Headphone Highlights, it takes more contemporary artists and they just say, well, tell us what you're listening to now. And they'll just go through like an hour-long playlist and they'll play the song and then they'll just say like what they like about it. I didn't even know how I got to this, but there's artists called the Haxan Cloak and I was like, well, what's that? I never heard of them. So it turns out there's this noise drone artist, the kind of thing I'm into. I look down his playlist. Half of it is stuff that I love, like Wolf Eyes and Keith Fullerton Whitman and Purian, all these noise artists. And the other stuff is stuff that I haven't heard of. So, like, some of the stuff that I haven't heard of, I'm like, man, this is good. I'm really into this. So, like, he turned me on to this producer named Laurel Halo, who's on Hyperdub. It's the same when dubstep meant something before Skrillex, like, the same label that Burial was on. He's like, man, like, this Laurel Halo chick just has me confounded. Like, you know, and usually that's the music that I end up loving, so the music that confounds me. So, like, just listening to that was, like, just really amazing. And if I go through the list, there's a lot of the stuff that Crystal has talked about. I know they do one with the XX. And there's a lot of stuff that I haven't heard of and stuff that, like, wow, that's really underground. So Headphone Highlights that have sort of got me excited. Like Mickey Blanco, who's one of my favorite MCs nowadays, does one. But you know what Mickey Blanco does? She just talks about, mostly her tracks, which is kind of boring, right? If they just talk about their tracks and play their tracks. But there's one with Bauer, who's the producer who made the Harlem Shake, that's his song that he created, right? And then also Juju. I love the band Juju. So they talked to Jamie from Juju. Even better, If you click on one, it will give you like lists of things that like you might be interested in. Like, oh, if you like them, you probably like this. So it's just this never-ending rabbit hole of like, yeah, I like that guy. I like her. She's awesome. She's just my favorite singer in the world. You just go down this list. And so just for instance, like I had talked about the one Killer Mike record the one time it's produced by LP. They did like an hour-long fireside chat with LP, and it's like down at the bottom, you might like Doom. You might like RZA. You might like Aesop Rocky. So like hour-long talks of like career-spanning retrospectives of all these people. Then, of course, if you click the one on RZA, there's like three more hip-hop producers that you might want to read. It's really...
It's 5 in the morning and you've got to be at work in 2 hours.
Maybe. It's Sunday already. Wow.
Maybe. So it's just really cool. Red Bull Music Academy Radio, two programs I really love, Fireside Chat and Headphone Highlights. In particular, Fireside Chat with Tim Hecker, Headphone Highlights with the Hacks and Cloak. Go for it. Good stuff.
I like the name Hacks and Cloak.
I know. Well, that's why I clicked. Yeah. I think that's why I clicked. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's almost like D&D item, you know.
Oh, yeah. And then it's all like, you know, I think the first thing he does is like Autechre. I'm like, yeah, I like Autechre. If you want more information, where can you go?
www.library.nashville.com.
You're pointing at each other, it doesn't work during an audio podcast. Or
you hear Bill say gov again and then just say, gov. Oh, no, just Google it.
T-E-T.
And what we just read for you was a internet address. So if you have the internet, you type that in the address bar of your internet browser.
That's like interwebs.